Cool, great.
Yeah, I guess the next one we wanted to ask about was the Amnesia award-winning Baltic Porter.
The Amnesia was, I first ran across the style of the Baltic Porter when I was in Houston. And during the time when I was in Houston, we had the homebrewers, and there's three major homebrew clubs. There was the Masternauts, which they were, they were 75% of the guys in the Masternauts work at NASA. So they're super intelligent engineers, you know, and they're really geeky about their beer. So, and then there's the Foam Rangers. They're one of the first homebrew clubs, or they claim to be one of the first homebrew clubs in the United States. And there's the KGB, which is up in the northern part of Dallas. But I used to brew with these guys, and we would brew small batches, three-barrel batches. And the Foam Rangers wanted to do a Baltic Porter. I'm like, Baltic Porter, what's that? I said, well, they gave me some examples. I'm like, this is phenomenal. This is awesome beer. Let's do it. So we did it, and from there I developed a recipe and worked with it. And in April of 2008 in San Diego, when I won the award, I was just shocked, blown away. It was amazing. So.
Right. And then the next one, the Flanders Ned, which is a sour red beer.
Yeah.
Kind of tell us about the beer, and I was also wondering, with the setup that you have, are there like logistical issues to using Brettanomyces and souring a beer?
Definitely. Yeah. I wanted to do sour beer. I wanted to play around with Brettanomyces and lactobacillus and you know, Americans really don't know what those beers are. So, you know, great way to introduce people to these styles of beers through a brew pub.
Yeah.
And especially one that we can, you know, we get the beer out quick. We have a lot of different, you know, we have a lot of different tap lines. So logistics was the problem with having the bacteria in your brewery. That's the last thing any brewer wants. Unless you're just doing those styles of beer. So what I did is actually I brought the wort to the brew kettle and then boiled it to sterilize it, cooled it down and added the bacteria to it and let it go. I let it go for about 12 to 18 hours and then boiled it to kill out the bacteria and got enough sourness. And then I introduced it to the yeast and fermented it up and brewed it.
Okay.
And so if I kept it in the brew kettle, it was in this environment where it wouldn't contaminate the rest of the beer. It took a while to age out, but now it's just phenomenal. I am going to do it again, but it's going to take a while.
Was there any problem with sanitation? Any worry that maybe that because it's in the brew kettle that the next batch might get some junk in it, or because you boil it, is that not really a problem?
Yeah, we were boiling it, the bacteria killed it off.
So it's not really a...
Exactly. The best way to sterilize is through heat.
Sure.
And, heat penetrates through metal and through gaskets and will kill off anything. Even you could be a dirty brewer, and as long as you use heat sterilization, what they call hot kill, use hot kill. You can kill off most anything.
Brilliant. And then lastly, the reason we're here today, the Stein beer. That you're brewing out back, which we'll get more on the scenes reporting. We had a sample of the Belgian yeast version, and we just drank the British yeast version. Why don't you tell us about the process and what you guys do differently to your Stein beers than other breweries today?
All right. The Stein beer is it's more about technique than it is ingredients. And the technique behind it is Stein in German means stone. And by technique, in ancient times, before brewers were able to use metal, they had wood vessels called tuns. and there's tons, you know, since they're made out of wood, you couldn't heat them up. And the only way you could heat these up is through introducing hot rocks. So you heat these rocks in fire and add them to the mash, and the heat would transfer from the stone into the mash and warm the mash up to a temperature where the enzyme could break the starch down into sugars. Steinbeers have been around for a couple thousand years. Basically the same process here is that what we do is we create a mash, transfer it to the brew kettle, and transfer it to another vessel, add the hot rocks to it. The rocks are about 1500 degrees. This creates a cauldron effect, caramelizes sugars inside the mash, and puts on a heck of a show. There's steam and smoke. It's pretty cool. Inside this other vessel, with the rocks, they continue boiling for about 20 minutes. From there, we'll transfer back into the brew kettle. And repeat this a couple times. And then boil it off and add our hops to it. From it out. The two different styles that we have, I was just experimenting around which one I'd like the best, and I guess which one our guests would like the best. And we did one with a British ale, and you guys tried that out, and pretty happy with that one, so I think we're going to stick with that. But I did one with the Belgian style yeast, and it was, you know, it turned out, it's still aging out in the barrel, it turned out pretty funky, you know, it's got a whole bunch of stuff going on, and I think when it ages out, we'll have it on as a specialty beer, and I'm really looking forward to put that one on. Should probably come out in the summer.
What will you call that one on tap?
I don't know.
Because he's just called Steinbeer.
No. Coming up with the names, I kind of think about it, and I wake up the next morning and I have a name for beer. It's all about inspiration. I, you know, have a couple pints of it, and then I take a nap, and I got the name.
An inspirational dream.
Exactly. Yes.
And now you guys are one of the few breweries that are actually still using the rock method.
That's correct. I know of two other breweries, and I think there's another in the U.S. that does it. In Madison, they've done it with Lake Louie and with cooperation with Capital. They put out Stein beer twice, and they use it as a specialty beer for the Great Taste of the Midwest about 10 years ago. Yeah, they said they used the rocks, they dropped the rocks, and they said there was shards of rocks shooting everywhere.
Used the wrong rocks?
Yeah, I guess so. They did, and it really inspired me. That their beer inspired me to move forward. But Bosco's in Nashville, they do a Stein beer. And there's a German company that still does traditional Stein beers. And I couldn't tell you what the name was.
I will look at it. One other beer that you didn't mention that I remember, it was sort of a special riff on a beer that you do regularly, the Maggie IPA. You did an iced version of that sometime last year, I think.
That is correct.
And I know that there's some legal wrangling that has to be done. There's the ice distilling is considered distilling the same as distilling whiskey and so forth, and that requires different legal steps. But this wasn't an ice distillation, correct? This was just like an ice curing process?
That is correct.
Okay. And what effect do you think that has to the beer?
When you freeze a beer out, it's kind of faux aging. You can freeze a beer, you can age it, you know, give it the sense that it had time on it. That means that the beer, during the freezing process, flavors will mellow, hops will drop out, and things become more rounded.
All right. And I know that you're you've got some hop growing going on that you guys
That's
do
correct.
Here. Why don't you tell us about sort of what inspired you to growing your own hops, where that's going on, and so forth.
The inspiration to growing my own hops came earlier last year when I was buying hops for $3 to $6 a pound, and the next thing you know, I have to buy hops between $25 and $35 a pound.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, and lucky enough, we did a cooperative thing with Sand Creek and a few other breweries when we bought hops from Germany, and you know, I bought the hops at $15 a pound, which was a heck of a deal. But you know, when I think about how I'm going to keep being a Wisconsin brewer, and you know, I want to keep that income in the United States. You know, I want to, and even better, I want to keep the income of you know, purchasing my grain and my hops, you know, here in Wisconsin, and create a microeconomy. So we're working with several different farmers, and actually Gorst is a
friend of the show.
Exactly. Yeah. They're doing stuff to trying to get a cooperative together for small farmers to produce hops and sell hops to Wisconsin brewers. And that's basically the inspiration. I think we should keep local products local. You know, we're producing, you know, good beer. We have great beer in Wisconsin. You know, and why not have our local farmers produce the grain? Because we can produce the grain. We can also produce the hops and go from there. You know, keep it here in Wisconsin.
That's right.
And but you guys are growing specifically, they're going to be trolled. You have like your own patch of land or something that you're growing stuff on?
I have a secret plot of land out in Greene County. And I'm growing an acre of hops and different varieties for the brewery. And I'm on my first year, about 350 plants right now.
Wow.
And hopefully I'm looking to get about 200 pounds of hops from that.
Nice.
Yeah. So and we'll be using those in the beers we produce here. Hopefully in about 3 years I'll be producing about a ton of hops.
Wow. So enough to just
Take care of the brewery and I got another iron in the fire for those extra hops. So
okay.
We'll keep you updated.
Okay. And I know last time I was here, you showed off some wild hops that you found kind of in the forest of Wisconsin somewhere. And you mentioned that you might be thinking about trying to grow those. I mean, tell us a little about how you found those and stuff.
Yeah, I was really excited to find those. When I first came here, I was walking on the Military Ridge Trail and dazed off, you know, like usual, daydreaming. I looked up and I said to myself, "Is there hops?" And so I picked some and I went back the next fall and I harvested a few pounds and actually I had it analyzed by Gore's Farm.
Jeez.
And we were all excited because Wisconsin brewers, you know, they want a Wisconsin variety hop, and it ends up it's Cascade.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Is that since I talked to you last? You got me all excited.
Yeah,
it was something special.
It is special. It's wild hops. You know,
okay.
They're a
mutant cascade.
Exactly. So the you know someone, and I'm sure it came from when they grew hops back, you know, 100 years ago. But there are wild hops out there, and if anybody's listening, you know, who's searching for wild hops, there's people interested in harvesting that. So out in the fall, look for hops and go to Gorse Farms and have it analyzed.
Very cool. So you've been hinting at this, and I don't know how much you want to give away your other irons in the fire, little side projects. What is this Mark Ducal Grubby Troll side project that you're working on? Or how much do you want to tell the public?
Well, we're coming out with it's more like my own little venture with the Haas. So we may be coming out with new beer products and hop products. I don't want to get into it too much. Keep it a little secret.
Okay.
So, but yeah, I've been looking into it, and I think we'll find out in the fall as far as what we'll have. Probably different beer through another company that I'm looking at starting up and doing other hop products.
Very cool. And one last little thing I wanted to ask about. There was some very small controversy over the Amnesia Baltic Porter. You guys do bottle some of them and sell them out in a little cooler in the front here. And I think the feds have a little bit of a problem with the title of that beer.
Well, they said we couldn't use the word amnesia because it was implying that it had a result. So, it goes back to, you can't name beer, certain things. I thought it was kind of the beer was named after a bicycle that's been left in a tree here at Blue Mounds, and the tree has grown around it.
Really?
I thought that's what I named it after. That's a perfect case of amnesia. Where to leave my bike? we got a picture. If you go down to Blue Mounds, you can see the bicycle tire still sticking out of the tree. That's pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
If you had to stock your fridge with someone else's beer, who would it be?
It's always on the spot.
Yeah, I always go back to what I drink most of, and I drink a lot of beer when I go fishing. I go fishing a lot. And the beer that I always go back to is Pabst Blue Ribbon.
PBR.
You betcha. When I learned how to drink in a bar, it was all through, my friends who their parents were all construction workers, and so construction workers only drink Pabst. So I would drink Pabst, and besides that, Pabst is an excellent beer. I think it's the American lager is PBR. And we did Captain Fred is a pre-pro, my pre-pro version of Captain Fred. Of Pabst.
Oh, yeah. And then what other breweries do you see doing some really cool, new, innovative or kind of breaking the lines?
Ale Asylum is always out there. Sand Creek, I mean, Mark Noble, he does sales there and he does product development, and he's constantly homebrewing new beers, and at least once a week he comes by with a six pack of new beers and he's like, test these out, see what you like. And so I go through his beers, but Sand Creek is, they're coming around and doing some great stuff. I think there's a lot of people out there. There's Central Waters, who's fantastic, and they're coming about. And it's just to look around and do some research and look for the new stuff out there.
All right, thanks a lot for sitting down, taking the time, and hopefully we'll get some cool audio of rocks being dropped into the earth.
To use your imagination.
Yeah, exactly.
After the formal interview, we all went outside where Mark showed us the special process he uses to make his Stein beer.
So, all right, what exactly we got going on here? There's a little pumpy-looking thing, and all of a sudden this kettle keeps getting more and more full with beer. What's going on? Yeah.
And we're traveling to the 55-gallon steel drum, the stainless steel drum, and we heat up the rocks. The rocks have been in since about 7 this morning, and we'll let things happen.
And how many times do we have to fill this drum? Because I know this obviously doesn't fit the whole batch, so you sort of do it in cycles. How many fills do we do?
We're gonna fill it up twice.
Twice.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
And we'll as soon as it gets up to
to about three quarters of the way up, we're going to start dropping rocks.
Cool.
And then the moment of truth, as we drop 1,500 degree rocks into the kettle to boil and caramelize the wort.
Let it go, big time.
Oh, man. Woo-hoo-hoo!
Oh, yeah. Okay, watch out. Back up and boil over.
So, get it in there.
That's the sound of wort being boiled by superheated rocks in Mount Horeb. Sweet.
Yeah, you know, kind of... Awesome. Going back to what I'd said earlier about, you know, that was one of the coolest experiences I've ever had brewing beer. I mean, you could hear in the audio, and even the audio doesn't do justice. It was this giant barrel just suddenly came alive, and just to see everything boil that quickly was so cool. You know, these rocks just unleashing heat, and just such a fun new experience to see. And
very cool.
It was fun to drop the rocks in, too.
Yeah, we just got to drop a superheated rock. That was definitely cool. Wow.
And the process of, you know, they say it gets more caramelization and whatnot. When we dropped the rocks and they were all on one side of the barrel, and the barrel kind of had a very light foam going on top. And as it started boiling up on one side, a very dark, rich brown caramel foam started growing on one side, and you could just see the effects right away. Like, the beer instantly got darker, and you could just see it, and you could just tell that the flavors were changing right before your eyes.
Yeah,
definitely. And I mean, one of the cool things about it, I think, was just sort of the do-it-yourself nature of the whole venture.
It felt so approachable, you know, like evening, it's like, we could do that.
Yeah, I mean, they had what they used to heat the rocks were, you know, homemade, essentially grills made out of, they chopped in half kegs.
Barrels, yeah.
And heated up the rocks in there with, you know, oak left over from a barrel that exploded. Mm-hmm. And, it was a really cool process to see that they would go through and do that. And, I was looking at, some stuff about Steinbier's online, and I did find one other brewery that had made a beer like this. Was the Port Brewing Company, Tom Arthur's, you know, Pizza Port, mm-hmm. Lost Abbey. The way they did theirs was kind of similar. They had their normal, what must have been a brew kettle or a hot liquor tank or something in their brewery, and they took the superheated rocks and put them in kegs, mm-hmm. and brought the kegs into that kettle and then filled the kegs within there so they could just like drain them out. Right in there, but it was a pretty similar process, maybe just a little bit bigger. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of cool to see. There's a video of that online if you search for like Port Steinbier or something like that. Anything else you guys want to say about the Stein?
No, it was awesome. I can't wait to try to brew one.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Yeah, he gave us a couple leftover rocks. We're gonna try and maybe homebrew one of those. Mm-hmm. Couple of the cool things from the interview, I just kind of wanted to bring up the growler cozy that John asked him about. The Grumpy Troll growler cozy is available. He's pretty cool looking.
I never know when you'd ever need that, but
keep it cold, man.
It's cool, I guess.
If you're gonna take it on a picnic, or
I grew up in like a very like hunting and fishing relatives, you know, family.
Yeah,
and everyone used like the beer cozies.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You don't know about the growler cozy?
Seems interesting.
It's not blaze orange or like hunting camouflage or anything.
Well, that's a great story. I mean, like, try to get the salesman to like do something, like not be able to do something, you know, and he comes back with this growler cozy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty funny.
It's just kind of silly.
I also really liked the... Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, I mean, I understand a cozy for a can of beer.
Yeah.
Because it keeps your hand from getting cold and your beer from getting warm. But I usually don't just go, you know, out to the ball game with a growler and start drinking from the growler. It's usually something you, like, you grab out, you pour everyone out a glass. And
but if you're going somewhere on a picnic, a grill out...
It's in a cooler.
Is it?
It's
big. It takes up a lot of space.
Well, then just drink it.
I don't know.
Should be drinking semi-warm anyways.
It at different temps.
Yeah, I guess. I also really like the story of the name of the Amnesia Baltic Porter. I hadn't heard that before. Yeah. The bicycle stuck in a tree.
Yeah, that's great.
I just look for that somewhere.
We do have to give the bartender their props, though. The first bartender who had to pour us a growler off cask.
Yeah.
As we talked about, the Dane refused to do that because it was too much work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he actually sat there for, I mean, how long did that take? 5 minutes? Is that a fair guess?
Because it foamed up a lot.
And it was just constant foam and he's, you know, just pumping away.
Cask growler.
That was great. Thank you to him.
Yeah, it was the Maggie IPA dry hopped on cask.
Very interesting. I think I like it better on tap, just normal tap.
Yeah, I think so too.
But it was really interesting to try if you get a chance to go out there. I don't know. It was interesting.
Yeah, it was good. I like the regular Maggie, I think, too. But yeah, the cask one was cool to have. Also, Central Waters was one of the breweries that Mark named as one of his favorites in the area. And that's who we're going to have on the show next week, Paul from Central Waters Brewing Company. So that's a nice little plug.
Yeah, it's like we asked him to say it.
Yeah, we...
But we didn't.
I mean, I cut out the part where I asked him to. No, we didn't ask him. But although, I mean, when he says the name of your brewery right after talking about how much he loves Pabst, maybe it doesn't mean quite as much. I don't know.
Well, everyone has their beers, you know?
Yeah, I think it's true. It's funny that it's definitely been true for a lot of the brewers we've talked to have mentioned either whether it be Pabst or Bud or Coors Original or something. They have one of those beers that they always go back to.
Mm-hmm.
Which is definitely, you know, so these people who are making World Beer Cup award-winning Baltic Porters and, you know, these really intense beers, you know, for a certain time and place, they like to drink PBR or whatever. Uh-huh. That's cool. PBR wouldn't, I don't know if that'd be my choice. So.
Grain Belt Premium.
Yeah, Grain Belt Premium. The classic St. Paul brew. Now in New Ulm, but still. Yeah. Great water makes great beer. But, Yeah, I don't know. Any other thoughts on our Mount Horeb experience?
The two different yeasts, the English and the Belgian yeast between the two and the sign beer, amazing.
Sure.
If anyone ever gets a chance to find two beers that are identical except for the yeast, it's an amazing opportunity to really find out how much more yeast is than just providing the alcohol and carbonation. I mean, it is totally changed the flavors, a totally different beer.
It was drastically. He was talking about as Mark said in the interview, he split the Stein beer and used a British and a Belgian yeast, and we got to taste the both of those. And drastically different beers, definitely.
Wow.
And the Belgian one, said
the Belgian one was very like distinct Belgian flavors to it.
Yeah,
it had some funk.
Yeah,
it was a little sour, a little funky. Nice.
But I didn't really picture it as like a Stein beer, you know, after having like. The Stein beer that we did in the tasting and, you know, just some other examples of like, you know, more of like a like malty, like amber lager Stein beer. You know?
Yeah, it really lost a lot of the body and the maltiness, definitely. And but he did say that he was going to let that one age a little longer and put it on tap probably in the summer if you guys want to try the Belgian one. But I believe the one we made is going to get a British treatment. I think that's the way to go. I think that was a better beer, personally.
For sure.
The Belgian one was really interesting, but I think the British one was better. But yeah, Grumpy Troll, Pub and Brewery, Mount Horeb. Thanks again to Mark, the Captain Ducal, for letting us hang out and getting his hair and watch him brew this beer. It was a really cool process, and it's really fun to drop superheated rocks into a vat of wort.
Oh, one final thought. If you want to do this at home, he recommends doing only with granite.
Yeah.
Other rocks have a tendency to explode, very dangerous. So.
And with welding wire.
And stainless steel welding wire. So if you're going to do this at home, make sure you look into it, cover all your grounds.
Yeah.
If you want, send us an email, we'll let you know kind of what we have, because it can be a very dangerous technique if you don't practice safety. So.
Yeah, it is the rocks going from really hot to being in a liquid to cooling down really fast. Can shatter, and he did mention that whatever rock Capital and Lake Louis used when they made theirs probably wasn't the right decision because they said they had shards of rock flying around the brewery, and you don't really want that in your backyard or anywhere near your face.
They're hot, they'll put your eye out.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, if you use caution and look it up. There's lots of info on the internet. BYO.com had a little article about homebrewing Stein beer, and yeah, they believe they recommended Granite as well, which is what he used. He said he got it from a
landscaping
company. Yeah, but definitely within the realm of the average home brewer.
Mm-hmm.
All you need is a fire and all the normal brewing equipment, basically, and rocks. But yeah, thanks again to Mark for having us out there. It's a great time, and like I said, stay tuned next week. We will be talking with Central Waters, one of our favorite Wisconsin breweries. And thanks for listening to Beer Talk today. Any final thoughts, gentlemen?
Nope.
Drink beer.
All right. Thank you. Drink a beer, drink a Stein beer. Have a good night, everybody.